Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past. Our inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune. A fortune compounded of many things. Of Spaniards building old St. Augustine in Florida. The voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is Andrew Jackson's victory at New Orleans. And the telegraph speeding words across the nation. Let us now go back to a significant period in American history, one which we all share in our inheritance. In Burlington, Vermont, on the campus of the University of Vermont, stands the statue of a man. Part of the inscription on the statue reads, Justin Smith Morrill, Stratford, Vermont, in Congress for 43 years, 1857-1899, a term of service longer than that of his predecessors or successors. Probably there aren't many people in America who will recognize that name, but at least one-fifth of all resident college students in the United States today owe their education to the efforts of Justin Smith Morrill. And if you're ever in Stratford, Vermont, almost anybody there can tell you about the man named Morrill.
Justin Smith Morrill? No, just about all there is to know about him. He and my grandpa grew up together. Yeah. Justin Morrill used to clerk in a store when he was a young'un, owned by Judge Harris, twas. Set right where this one's sitting. Back there when Justin was a clerk in, a general store wasn't only a store, oh, no siree, bub. It was an institution, that's what it was. Meeting place where all the neighbor folks would gather around the Cracker Barrel to discuss problems of the day. And if there was a problem to discuss, you can bet your bottom dollar that young Justin Morrill would be perched up there on the apple barrel just waiting to get in his 2 cents worth.
Well, it'd be June before we know it.
Yeah.
Expect to do a big planting this year?
Oh, about the same as always. Don't figure on putting in too big a crop, but with a hired hand so hard to get.
Reckon they are at that. Good thing young Tom will be helping out on the farm.
Tom? How do you figure?
Oh, he's nigh on to 15, ain't he?
Yeah.
And he'll be finishing the school in June, won't he?
Well, now, I don't know, Judge.
What do you mean, you don't know?
Emily and me, we've sort of been talking things over, and... Well, Emily's got her heart set on sending the boy away to school somewhere to learn a profession.
A profession?
Like doctoring or maybe being a lawyer.
But it don't figure, Eb. Young Tom's a farmer, son. His place is right here to home, helping you out with the planting and the harvesting and, well, all the rest.
That's what I told Emily. But, well, you know Emily.
Yes, yes, I know Emily all right. I also know that sending young Tom away to school, why, it's all wrong. I say when a fella like Tom turns 15, it's high time for him to forget about schooling and start work on the farm. Now, the way I see it, education's all right for city folks, sons.
Well, I don't know, Judge. Emily's got her mind set on seeing the boy continue with his learning, and... Well, now, you take Justin here. 17, aren't you, lad?
Yes, Mr. Squires, 17.
And you've been away to school, ain't you?
Well, now, I wouldn't exactly say I've been away to school, Mr. Squires. I was over at the academy at Thetford for a term and to Randolph Academy for another.
But you learned something in them places, didn't you?
Latin, Greek, mathematics.
Huh.
Latin, Greek, and mathematics. Them's fine things for a farm boy to know.
Well, might come in handy someday.
But will they tell a farmer's son how to grow corn taller than his neighbors? Or how to save the crops when a drought hits him?
I reckon not.
Yeah, of course they won't. That's why I say it's a pack of foolishness for any of the farmers hereabouts to waste their hard-earned money to send their young ones away to a school.
Excuse me, Judge Harris, but I wouldn't say it was foolishness, exactly.
Didn't do you any good, did it?
Might have if I could have gone longer. But it's like you said, Judge. Schooling's only for city folks' sons these days, because they're the only ones who can pay their way.
You saying that you'd have kept on with your schooling if your folks had had the money?
I'm saying that it's too bad all us young folks, whether we're farmers' sons or lawyers' sons or anybody else's, it's too bad we can't all afford to go to school and learn about all the things that would help us grow upright and prosperous. I'm also saying that it's too bad there aren't colleges where we wouldn't have to pay nothing at all.
Well, sir, Justin Morrill kept right on thinking about things like that, even after he left Stratford to clerk up in the state of Maine. Then long about 18 and 34, he come back here to go into partnership with Judge Harris and open a store down in the heart of the lower village where the Roids meet. And later on, he took over the store that sets right here. And then folks began noticing something was bothering Justin. And Ruth Swan, she noticed it most of all.
Real still tonight, isn't it, Justin?
Yeah.
The moon's so bright you can almost see into those houses across the river.
Uh-huh.
Justin.
Yes, Ruth?
What's wrong?
How do you mean?
Well, you used to be so busy around the store waiting on folks and stopping to pass the time of day, giving advice on farming. But the past 6 months or so, you've changed.
Have I?
Oh, yes. You never seem to hear folks when they talk to you. It's all... Well, it's like your mind was a million miles away.
You hear that, Ruth?
It's only a train whistle.
Yeah. It's only a train whistle. But it's on a train that's going somewhere. Won't be long before I'll be getting on that train.
You? You're planning on going somewhere, Justin? For a vacation?
I'm going somewhere, Ruth, but it won't be for a vacation.
Where, then?
Washington, maybe.
Why on earth would you want to go there?
Maybe to serve as a congressman.
Congressman?
If folks will have me.
Well, what about the store?
I'm selling my share to Judge Harris.
Whatever's in that mind of yours, Justin. What's all this talk about being in Congress and giving up the store?
Feel like walking a spell?
All right. Well, Justin?
I've been thinking about it for quite a while. Since I've been with the store, I've had to travel down to Washington now and again.
Yes, I know.
I got to know folks there, senators and the like, and I talked with them. Set me to thinking, Ruth.
About what?
About getting into politics.
But, Justin, what do you know about politics? You're a farmer's boy.
All the more reason for me to get into politics. I know what a farmer's boy needs.
And what does he need?
An education, mostly.
Educating the young folks means a great deal to you, doesn't it?
Yes, Ruth. A great deal.
And you feel that if you could get to Washington, maybe the right folks would do something about it.
Yeah, that's just about the color of the corn.
Then if that's what you want, Justin, you go ahead and do it. I'm sure the good Lord will find a way to get you heard.
Thank you, Ruth. Will you wait for me?
Oh, yes, Justin. I'll wait.
So Justin Morrill, he gave up being a storekeeper and went in for politics right here in Stratford. It wasn't more than 2 years before he'd become to be, well, pretty big potatoes in the local Whig party. Yeah, real successful politician he was. He up and married Ruth Swan, too. That was long about 18 and... 51, yeah. Justin did a lot of whooping and hollering for the folks hereabouts, and around 1855, they figured it was maybe time to send him to Washington, so they elected him representative. A year after that, he stood up on his own 2 feet, and he let them Washington fellows know what was on his mind.
Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker?
Chair recognizes Justin Morrill, the representative for Vermont.
I would like to rise in agreement with the sentiments of the previous speaker, who spoke of our country's being on the threshold of a scientific and industrial age. This is indeed an age of industry which lies before us. My sympathies are all for the working man. Being one myself, and with all my kith and kin of that sort, I was brought up on a farm, and I know something about how to plant corn, to pull flax, and to dig potatoes. My family formed a frugal, industrious, and eminently simple household where all the work was done by members of the family. Everyone had his full share of daily tasks. However, I do not think that the education of boys should be hampered with these practical labors at the time they are gaining their education. Therefore, gentlemen, I would like to introduce the following resolution. That a Board of Agriculture be established under the direction of the Secretary of the Interior, and that one or more national agricultural schools be established, in order that one scholar from each congressional district and two from each state at large may receive a scientific and practical education at the public expense. Thank you, gentlemen.
Good idea? Certainly was, but with all t'other problems plaguing Congress, Justin Morrell's resolution kind of got lost in the shuffle. It was a whole year before he got a chance to do anything more about it, and he sure was set on doing something about it, that resolution of his. Even though some of his friends tried to discourage him. More mutton, Morrell?
No. Thank you, Hebert.
You hardly touch your food.
Well, I reckon I'm not very hungry.
Problem on your mind?
Yes. But it shouldn't be a problem.
What shouldn't?
I've been thinking of that resolution I tried to get through last year.
Mm. Oh, that again. Yeah, don't know when I've tasted better mutton, Morrell. Sure won't have more?
No. Yeah. No, thank you.
Don't know what you're passing up. So you're still set on getting that bill passed, huh?
Yes, I am. Look here, Hebert. Each of our states has within its borders land which is still public land controlled by the government. Yet how is this land being used? By strictly private and local interests. Instead of being used for the national welfare.
Agreed. Something should be done to correct the situation. What does it have to do with education?
Just this. Some of our states can well afford to assume the cost of educating its young men. But there are others which are sadly deficient. And they will stay deficient unless they can be aided by a common fund of some sort. And such a fund could easily be realized from the sale of these public lands. You follow me?
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Well, now why couldn't a certain portion of the public lands in each state be donated to the state, in return for which the establishment of schools would be guaranteed? Schools open to everyone.
Well, basically, I'd say your idea is logically sound, Morrell. But there are a few questions that come to my mind. For example, on what basis would you have the land portioned out?
Well, perhaps on a basis of population. So many acres per 100 people.
I'm afraid the objections against that idea would outvote the arguments for it.
Why?
Because I know what I'm talking about. I'm an old congressman. I've seen others before you fight for an ideal they believed in, an ideal which, like yours, would also have benefited the country as a whole. But you and the others have forgotten something. We have not yet learned to think and to act as really United States. Each state is still concerned with its own wants and problems. Now, you hold on to your dream for another 5 years, Morrell, or even 10. And then perhaps the people will be willing to accept it.
I have already waited 29 years, Hebert. I remember when I was 17, when the idea first came to me. I remember telling folks back in Stratford it was too bad all of us young'uns couldn't afford to learn things that would help us grow up right and prosperous. And how there should be schools where we wouldn't have to pay anything at all to get an education. Well, I still feel that way, Hebert. And I'm going to fight for what I believe in, not in 5 years or 10, but right now.
Mr. Speaker,
chair recognizes the representative from Vermont.
Mr. Speaker, at this time I wish to introduce a bill which would grant to the several states, for the purposes hereinafter mentioned, an amount of public land. This land to be apportioned to each state in quantity equal to 30,000 acres for each senator and representative in Congress, to which the states are respectively entitled by apportionment under the census. Any state which may take and claim the benefit of the provisions of this act shall provide within 5 years the establishment of at least one college. Or the grant to such a state shall cease.
Well, sir, I can tell you that that bill of Justin Morrell's stirred up a whopper of a hornet's nest. Arguments flew thick and fast. Some of the congressmen thought it was a good idea. Others were certain that the land grants would be used for private speculation. And talk about filibustering went on for days. But finally, Justin Morrell's bill was seconded. The representative passed it and sent it on to the Senate. And that's where the bill stirred up even a bigger hornet's nest. It was nigh unto a year before the Senate finally passed it. Looked like Justin Morrell's dream was finally coming true, though. All the bill needed was the president's signature to make it a law. But old President Buchanan, he had his own ideas about it.
Please inform the gentleman that I shall not put my signature to this bill. For four valid reasons. It is unconstitutional. It deprives the government of much-needed revenue. It would make the states dependent upon the federal government. And it would set up colleges in competition with existing educational institutions.
Yes, Ruth?
Is everything all right, dear?
Yes.
What are you doing out on the porch? It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I couldn't sleep, but there's no cause for you to stay up.
I couldn't sleep either. I heard you pacing and... Well, what is it, Justin?
No, nothing really. Just getting old, I guess.
Old? Oh, you're only 49.
Feel more like 79.
It's the land grant bill, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you want to talk about it, Justin?
Appears to me all the talking's been done.
And so you're just going to sit back and feel sorry for yourself, is that it?
What gives you cause to say a thing like that?
Oh, I've watched you mope around here with a face as long as Grandfather's beard. And I said to myself, Ruth Swan Morrill, where'd that fighting young man you married? The fellow with a dream he was going to fight to see come true? The one who said educating the young'uns meant more to him than anything else in the world? That's what I said to myself, Justin.
Couldn't have got much of an answer, I expect.
No, Justin, I didn't. Now, supposing you give me an answer, what has happened to that man? Has he given up fighting so soon?
No. No, it isn't that I've given up fighting, Ruth. It's just that, well, it's been 4 years now since I took my seat in the House. 4 years since I first introduced the land grant bill. 4 years of wrangling and arguing and begging. You'd think I've been trying to put over something shady instead of trying to get folks interested in something that's for their own good and for the good of their young ones. What is it, Ruth? Why can't they see? What am I doing that's wrong?
Oh, it isn't anything you've done, Justin, dear. It's
well, then what is it?
Listen, Justin.
What?
Hear those crickets?
Yeah, I hear them.
They remind me of a young man sitting by the bank of a brook in Stratford, Vermont, listening to the sound of a far-off train whistle, and knowing that one day he would be on a train that would carry him into politics.
Mm. You remember that night after all these years?
Oh, yes, Justin. I remember it because it was the night you asked me to wait for you.
Yeah. And I remember something about that night, too.
What, Justin?
You told me that if I had my heart so set on getting an education for the farmer's sons, that somehow the good Lord would get me heard.
Justin, listen.
Mm. I hear it, Ruth. Sounding out there in the night like a sort of sign. Telling me that a lot of farmers' sons and thousands yet unborn would be mighty unhappy if I deserted him now.
Well, sir, now they do say that us Vermonters are stubborn folk. I reckon maybe we'll be. I, for one, say it's a good thing. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be sitting here now telling you about Justin Morrill. Well, after President Buchanan vetoed the bill, Justin Morrill snapped right out of being discouraged. Began fighting for it all over again soon as old Abe Lincoln took to the White House. And he got that bill introduced again. Then he saw it handed over to the Committee on Public Lands. And they didn't much like it. And that's when Justin Morrill took himself to see his friend, Senator Ben Wade of Ohio.
Turned it down, Ben. That's what they did. Gave me arguments that sounded like President Buchanan's all over again. But this time my dander is up, Ben. And I'm going to keep on fighting to get the bill passed, even if it means I have to filibuster for a week.
You're going to bust more than that if you don't stop pacing, Justin, and cool off.
Look here, Ben. You've got to help me.
And I intend to. If you don't explode from high blood pressure first.
Well, I'm sorry, Ben. I guess I have been acting pretty much like a hysterical woman.
I agree.
But when I think of the appropriations Congress has made, it's given the states millions of acres of swamplands, granted huge subsidies of lands to many of the states to build railroads, and now it's signed the Homestead Act, which gives free land to anyone who live on it and cultivate it. If Congress can do all that with the public lands, then by the great Jehoshaphat, it's got to pass the land grant bill.
Now, you don't have to convince me, Justin. I'm for passing your bill as soon as possible, and I'll see that it gets before the Senate.
Thank you, Ben.
But right now, it seems like every senator has some pet bill he wants made into law. So there's only one thing that'll get yours passed.
What's that?
Talk, talk, and more talk.
Well, sir, Ben Wade talked, all right. He started in May of 1862, Ben did. He talked all through May and into June. Finally, on the 10th of June that year, the Senate passed the bill and it was sent to the House. And this time, it didn't take those fellas long to side either. And just a week later, the bill was sent to the president for his signature. Well, sir, old Abe Lincoln, he looked around the nation, stretching westwards, and he saw how its agriculture needed developing, how it needed leaders in engineering and science. Yeah, Abe took a look to the future. And on July 2, 1862, he signed the land-grant college bill. Justin Morrill finally won his fight. And that's how come they got a statue of him up to the university.
Yes, after a 6-year struggle in Congress to have his bill passed, Justin Morrill had won. And today, over 70 institutions, including 26 state universities, as well as the universities of Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico, are recognized for their leadership in rural affairs and their firm reliance on scientific research. This is the inheritance which was given to us through the foresight and tireless efforts of the farmer's son from Vermont, Justin Smith Morrill. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. We are privileged this evening to hear from the past National Commander of the American Legion, Department of Kansas, Mr. Harry Colmery.
America's inheritance of individual and state rights was wisely provided for by the First Congress of the United States when in 1789, at its first session in New York City, it submitted to the states the constitutional amendments which have come to be known as the Bill of Rights. 10 years ago, the 78th Congress passed another Bill of Rights, which is in the American tradition of providing for the dignity of the individual and of promoting the maximum of opportunity for personal endeavor. It was my privilege in 1944 to be a member of the Special American Legion Committee, which wrote the GI Bill of Rights, presented it to, and steered it through the Congress. The Legion is proud of its sponsorship of this wise and humane legislation, which so benefits our nation. Over 8 million veterans have received training or education through the GI Bill, 2 million of them on the college and university level. 3.5 million have purchased homes, farms, and businesses under its guaranteed loan provisions. It is impossible to estimate the good which this legislation has done for the economy, the standard of living, and the cultural advancement of our country. This we do know, that those who defended American rights in World War II and in the recent Korean conflict need never suffer the difficulties and indignities incident to peacetime adjustment, which were the lot of many World War I veterans. Those who designed the GI Bill used the experiences of World War I and its aftermath to evolve a sound and practical program for the peacetime rehabilitation and adjustment of war veterans. The GI Bill of Rights and its companion bill, Public Law 550, which is designed for veterans of recent service, provide the opportunity for rehabilitation and readjustment for those who served their country in preserving its national integrity. That program is in the tradition of our precious inheritance of freedom.
Thank you, Mr. Harry Colmery. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history, to a time when Americans dreaming of the future forged that which we possess today. Today's story, That All May Know, was written by Milt Kahn. It featured Hans Conried as our narrator and Parley Bear as Justin Smith Morrill. Included in the cast in order of their appearance were Dick Ryan, Jack Nestle, Ann Seton, Ralph Moody, Jay Barney, Barney Phillips. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced and directed for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Wall speaking. Tonight, hear Meet the Press on the NBC Radio Network.